You can get utility, but really, like, that's never gonna be fully expressed and utilized unless there's a methodology and a philosophy and even like a psychology behind Web3, right? And I think that's the missing link for a lot of people. When brands realize that just simple approach of like, I'm gonna pay a third party or I'm gonna pay my community, that's gonna be the big ground shaker. We bet too much on the money and we didn't talk about the ethos, and now like it's been lost. I'm not saying it's been lost forever, but it's been lost for the near term. The first 13 years of my career, I was trained on how to extract value from people's pockets as a marketer. The last two, it's been all about value addition. How can I bring value to my audience?
Back to the 11th episode of Not a JPEG, a podcast for creatives and entrepreneurs building and innovating within Web3.
Where each week we explore everyday sectors of modern society and how NFTs will revolutionize how we start, scale, and sell businesses. My name is Katarina. This is Michael.
Welcome back.
And we're the hosts of Not a JPEG. If this is your first time ever listening to Not a JPEG, welcome. We're so excited that you're here. If you're listening to this on a podcasting app or on YouTube and you like what you're hearing, hit that subscribe button and the little bell to stay notified with any new episodes from Not a JPEG. And if you're on social media and want to get just the cream of the crop tidbit mic drops that are talked about in our podcast in a really succinct 1 minute video, check us out on social media, all platforms at Not a JPEG Podcast. We post a ton of great content there to fill your week with inspiring business related content that could get you building in Web3.
Today's episode is a continuation of a topic we touched on last week, which was DAOs.
Decentralized autonomous organizations.
Right. And, you know, it was a unique topic. We haven't really touched on it on this podcast until last week. This week, we are excited to keep the conversation going by bringing on a special guest, Chris Tabb.
Who is the founder of the Resistance DAO,
right.
Which is one of the largest DAOs that utilize LinkedIn as a way to communicate.
Right. And so he created this group on LinkedIn. We came across him when we started putting out our content on LinkedIn, connected. And he's got an amazing group of individuals that sort of run the full gamut of those interested in the blockchain, you know, technology in the space, and those actually building, and sort of everyone in between. He's got this group together, a lot of like-minded people, really great resource. And we're really excited to bring him on board today, see his insights, see what he, you know, his sort of ethos and way of building within the space, and why he, you know, why he chose LinkedIn, for instance, as a way to start rallying and building community. And yeah, I think it's going to be a great episode.
Oh yeah. Without further ado, let's get into it. Chris, how's it going? Welcome to Not a JPEG.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Of course. We're so glad that you were able to join us on this Saturday morning. And let's talk about what you do, DAOs, or decentralized autonomous organizations. But before we get into that, what is your personal elevator pitch? Who are you? What do we need to know about you?
Yeah, so the elevator pitch for Chris Tabb is, you know, I'm somebody that came into the industry, you know, almost 15 years ago, worked my way up from, you know, early social media. You know, I ended up running teams for large, you know, agencies. Eventually found myself going into startup world. And, you know, that's where I've been for nearly the last 6 years. So having a great time in the space. You know, I've been able to dabble and play in the Web3 space as well, build communities. But like I said, I'm super happy where I am, you know, career wise, and look forward to what's coming here in the future.
Nice. So serial entrepreneur, kind of.
Yeah, you know, serial entrepreneur. It's always I don't care for that term just because it, to me in my mind, it always indicates like constant failure. You know what I mean? When someone's like, I'm a serial entrepreneur, it's like, I fail a lot. But I say that with jest because, you know, I've had one successful startup, you know, but then I've also had, you know, six duds that I actually pursued and went after, right, and spent a bunch of time and money building out and energy. But, you know, behind that, there's probably been 70 thoughts that didn't get that far. But, you know, I probably spent at least 5-6 hours investigating. And, you know, I love it, though. You know, that's part of the challenge. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Part of the challenge. And it's a process, right? It's a journey, like you said. But my question for you is, so I love your background. How did you make the pivot into the Web3 space? Like, how did you end up here?
Yeah, you know, about 24 months ago, you know, like many of us, I was watching the crypto space. You know, at that point, you know, I'll just say, right, you could kind of throw money anywhere in the market and make, you know, a good return relatively quickly. You know, I guess I was, you know, I was acting as sort of this pipeline for a lot of my non-crypto friends, right, to get into the space. And at the time, and I'm sure you all remember this, right, you had to sort of move money from a bank account into maybe a centralized exchange and then had to maybe push it to a wallet and you had to type in all the digits. And it was like this big sort of, you know, oh my gosh, did the money actually make it? You know, and oh, by the way, like you probably lost about 15, you know, percent of that cash on the way in. But, you know, what I started to see was this opportunity for a new way to do business. And, you know, that ended up to me building a DAO and building a community. And, you know, I remember saying to myself, even early in the NFT craze, you know, how do we apply this to businesses? You know, how do we start to build a structural, you know, a structured business around this? Because I knew even then, right, like you can't go on selling JPEGs forever. You know, the audience attention span is eventually going to begin to wane, right? And even with a lot of that stuff, and I don't mean this in anything in particular, but a lot of that stuff is like last idiot in, right? So, and I witnessed it myself like many times, like I made some good money in crypto and then like would lose it all, right? Because I just misjudged the market. If you can do such a thing in the crypto space. Where I've gotten to right now is working with early stage, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, trying to find them funding, you know, in an environment that frankly isn't very friendly to funding right now. Again, that's part of the challenge. Those of us who are now here building, right, it's a huge opportunity. We're not the sort of grifters and the scammers. We're the folks who, you know, are here because we believe in what we're saying. And we're, you know, we're putting our time and our money and our attention into it. So yeah, that's sort of my end, you know, my entry into this space. It wasn't overnight. It was a cumulative, you know, I guess addiction that slowly took over my career and my life.
I was just going to say that is absolutely true. I mean, we all arrived here because of the curiosity around, you know, like to your point at the very beginning, yeah, you were throwing money left, right, and center. It's very easy to make it, right? Quote unquote. So that attracted all of us to the space. You know, it obviously started very frivolously with the JPEGs and sort of degen culture. And you know, that was sort of like a huge thing that ushered in that first wave of mass adoption and interest from the general public. And we're right there with you in terms of like, you know, there comes a point in time where you're like, okay, how is this sustainable? And what I mean by that is, where does the tech go from here, right? We can only stay in that one bubble of like buying and selling expensive JPEGs for so long. And so I love that you've approached it from the perspective of practicality, right? Where does this technology fit in terms of the way that we do business moving forward, right?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, if you look at it from the other angle, the absence of any sort of business model, right? All of these communities, all of these, you know, NFTs, cryptos, they'll all eventually trend to zero, right? Because that's what they're worth, you know, at their core. Utility is so important, but utility has a spectrum, you know, and an audience for it. And there's different ways that you can layer utility by adding, you know, elements from the Web2 world. So things like, I always use the example, like, you know, if I were to buy an NFT to a museum, you know, okay, that might be interesting for some people. But what happens if I could buy a NFT to the Met Gallery? Like, okay, that's a little bit more interesting, right? So now we've added brand power in, right? Okay, let me take it to another level. Let's say maybe I could buy this NFT, I could go to the museum, and I would get a proceed of everybody that came and looked at this famous painting, right? Like, so it's like these levels of utility that are available progressively require biz up that. There's a certain level, and you know what I'm talking about when I say this, like there's a certain level of which companies can adopt Web3 technology and NFTs, right? But there's no real investment there, right? It's a lot of sort of like cloud cover and like we're doing this thing, right? But they haven't, it doesn't affect their model. They haven't changed themselves. There's nothing at its core. Even these companies who say they're Web3, they're not really Web3, right? It's because it has absolutely nothing to do with NFTs and everything about the ethos and everything about how you're conducting yourself and this idea of transparency. So that's my little ramble on, like, I just, there's, you can get utility, but really, like, that's never going to be fully expressed and utilized unless there's a methodology and a philosophy and even like a psychology behind Web3, right? And I think that's the missing link for a lot of people.
It's so interesting you bring up the whole ethos and philosophy side of things, because it's something we've talked about a lot, especially with the whole royalties debate. The whole reason why we came to the space, and this is echoing you and echoing Michael as well too, is like we all came, or at least the people who I'd say, as you said, are more of a libertarian mindset or more of like, you know, entrepreneurial or from a side of seeing opportunity, we all came because it's like, wow, we can actually have this small frame of time where we can actually build something and maybe have a shot at actually impacting a lot of lives very quickly, or do something that's more ethical or do something that has more equity for different people. And so I think that ethos, as you said, is key to actually defining a Web3 organization or company or whatever project. Without that ethos, as you said, it's like, yeah, it's like Web 2, Web 2.5, or just like a very tech heavy solution that doesn't really fall into the Web 3 ethos or defined by Web 3, right? So that leads into the next part. You specialize, or at least you come from the Resistance DAO. For people who are listening to this podcast, I'm assuming many of them probably have no idea what a DAO is. What is a DAO in your own words?
Yeah, a DAO is just a group of like-minded individuals, right? Who are all coming together. It's like a social club, you know. It's like a labor union, right? It can be many different things, but at its core, it's just people with a common, you know, cause.
Right. And how do they work together? Like, what makes this so special?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they you know, it really depends on the type of DAO that they are. If they're an investment DAO, right, they're pooling their capital together and then they're making investments. And often those investments are voted on, right? So voting is a big piece of DAOs, right? It's also what we call consensus mechanism. You know, so it's like consensus mechanism could be just one for one votes, right? Consensus mechanism could also be something where like a soulbound token, right? And experience is now a weight, you know, inside of how that vote goes. And then of course you have, you know, DAOs out there and how do they operate, right? They operate many, many ways like corporate structure today works, right? Whoever has the most allocation is the one who makes the vote and you know, everybody else is just sort of along for the ride. So DAOs in many ways are no different than what we've all been doing for a long time. We're just sort of using a different technology to reach the same means.
Right. So then, you know, based on our conversation, would you say the major difference between corporations and a DAO would come down to ethos of being involved
and decentralization?
Yeah,
I'd say too.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to get your honest to God, you know, DAOs out there who are you know, operating within the ethos, which means that, you know, the group is making a decision based on how the group feels, not a small amount of people, right? Centralization, you know, obviously, you know, has worked for us thus far. Maybe it's not working as great as it used to. But people, you know, need to understand the risks that, you know, come with decentralization, right? Mm-hmm. And that's often, you know, one of the hurdles that we have to get over to, but often with DAOs, what makes them so, you know, sexy or attractive, right, is that people are willing to take risk in order to execute something they want to do, mm-hmm. get a job that they wanted, right? Help people who've been wrongly convicted of marijuana charges, right? Pool capital and reach parts of the market that I couldn't before, right? So injecting a little bit of risk into the scenario was all right. And that's how I would say DAOs are, because there isn't any, there's no safety net.
Yeah, I guess people, they have to be more creative, and hopefully in a situation where you have no safety net and there's a lot of risk, you actually have to solve problems, right, to survive. It's kind of a sink or swim almost.
Yeah, I think that's, you've captured it. People with their backs, you know, against the wall, you know, will kind of speak analogous, you know, graphically, but, you know, in a sense, right, they've got everything to lose.
Yeah.
You know, everything to gain.
Yeah.
And injecting that into a scenario is very dynamic and powerful.
And what got you interested in this space or interested in DAOs in the first place?
Yeah. So, you know, I have, you know, what attracted me, you know, I had this concept for, you know, a hybrid community, but really rooted in business because I hadn't seen anybody do it before. Right. So what I'm talking about is this kind of controversial take that, you know, people at their core are selfish, right? They have their own needs and wants that they want fulfilled. And if you were able to build a community where multiple different types of people could each have their needs fulfilled in a very organic way, like that would be an attractive business model to sit down, not just on top of, but also in between of. So, you know, this is where we start to get into resistance DAO, right? Where we start building our community on LinkedIn, which again was another thing that, you know, attracted me to building a community in a really thoughtful way that didn't involve Discord, it didn't involve Twitter, it didn't involve Telegram, any of those channels. And the reason I call them out is because I think they're just noise, right? And a lot of it is fake. A lot of it's bot activity. A lot of it is like reward type driven. It's not really brand affiliation. And also you get a lot of noise on those platforms where you're never quite sure, is this the person who, you know, bought my NFT? Do they have multiple NFTs? Like, how much should I be listening to them? Or are they just a squeaky wheel? So what I did is I ended up building this group of people who I layered it in with early stage entrepreneurs. And then with the next level up, and I grabbed the Web3 service providers, right? The marketing agencies, the blockchain development companies, metaverse development companies, and then went one layer up and grabbed the fundraisers, right? So your venture capital, your PE money, your family offices, and, you know, built the group in a way that each party was able to get their needs fulfilled. And I'll just quickly sketch that out. You know, so what do the early stage entrepreneurs want? They want money, they want exposure, they want validation. You know, the Web3 service providers, they want business. You know, they want to hook into successful projects that are going to generate them, you know, additional work down the line. And then finally, what do the venture capital or the fund, you know, managers want? They want good deal flow. You know, and their need is very unique. And understanding it for just a moment, a little bit more. In the venture capital world, when it comes to Web3, I'm not going to get in all sorts of trouble, but like, they don't really know what they're looking for, right?
That's fair.
I'm not surprised.
So, that's fair, yeah.
They end up, you know, so they have the current system, which uses scouts, right? And these scouts go out. But, like, these scouts have never done it before, right? These aren't – no one – who's built a Web3 company?
No one.
Like, and exited and now is a scout. Like,
yeah. It's such a new space. Like, I don't blame venture capitalists or scouts or entrepreneurs or anybody knowing what the heck we're doing. We're all kind of poking around this place in the dark, trying to see if something's going to turn the light on, right?
And it seems like, and you've probably noticed too, a lot of it is just like, and you touched on this at the beginning, is just throwing money at things because it's got the term or the right word in the hopes that, you know, these people know what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. You know, and I you know, in when it comes to the capital space, the thing that I see a lot happen, right, is these flashy projects suck all the oxygen out of the room. And I'll give you an example of one, right? Like Goblins.
Yeah,
Goblins was on everybody's radar. Everybody was talking about it. And like, when we look back in retrospect, right, 6 months back, like somebody put a sound file inside of like a JavaScript file. Like, and we all lost our minds like about it. Like, it just, and it's like basic programming. It's like basic like delight, but we all like fawned over it. Whereas like the thing that gets me upset is that there are legitimate B2B projects out there who are out there saying like, I want to tokenize hospitality and put it on the blockchain. And what I want to do is then I want to license it out to 500 hotels. Like, that's the conversation that needs to be taking place.
100%.
Yes. And unfortunately, what happened was like the market boom, boom, boom went up, right? Most of those projects were BS. They can, and I'll just say also, like, the money was too loud. The money was too loud.
That 100%.
Those communities, like, you can't run a community on money noise. Like, it's got to be about deeper connections, because when the money goes away, everybody leaves. And that's what happened, right? Like, I mean, you can go and find these dead communities who were, you know, like Rome, you know, 6 months ago.
That's who's in the space though, right? Like, the space during the bull run attracted people who were there purely just to make a quick buck, right?
Yep.
And it didn't matter if you had somebody trying to put hospitality in the blockchain, because that isn't going to make them that quick buck and that quick return like they do with day trading. That's going to just, you know, that's a long-term play that nobody's thinking about the long-term.
Yeah.
Absolutely nobody. Because we don't know what the long-term is yet.
And I also look at just like metaverses in general. Like, I think, when I look at somebody who's talking about the metaverse or how like the metaverse continuously like appears to be like a video game, I often think about like the answer I gave my son a couple years ago about like what aliens would look like, right? And I said, son, you have to understand the concept is that, like, I can't begin to imagine what this thing is because it is foreign. I have no frame of reference for it. Right. So, like, I understand the metaverse, like the first iteration was video games, but like, that is not how it's going to turn out.
No.
And I think that's a really short-sighted, like, idea that, like, we're just going to suddenly convince all these people to move into a metaverse and, like, put headsets on ourselves. Like, the question I have to ask people, like, have you actually ever worn a headset for, like, more than an hour? You want to, like, puke your brains out if you're over the age of 10. Like, just so anyway, I think we've just, like, we've went down some rabbit holes. That's good, but it also is really bad because then it led to the collapse in the market. You have the underlying economic pressure that's happening across the world right now. And now you've kind of gone to a place where, like, are we five steps back than we were a year ago? Like, how far back have we gone now? And then you see FTX and you have all the other things that are like, no one has confidence in the system. So, like, again, like, we bet too much on the money and we didn't talk about the ethos. And now, like, it's been lost.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's been lost forever, but it's been lost for the near term.
Definitely been lost in the near term. But, you know, I will say that maybe it's a good thing that it was lost, because I feel we've reflected on this a bit too. It's the ethos that everybody was talking about with Web3 in the bull run wasn't truly backed in their own personal responsibility and moral ethic. It was like, oh yeah, I love supporting small artists. Oh yeah, I love supporting these entrepreneurs doing things, but I just want to protect my bags. That was the deep rooted motivation and driving factor. Right. Yeah. And so we hope, and Michael and I talk about this, we hope most of these people are gone. I don't think they're fully gone because the next bull run's going to come around and they're going to be back. But in this time, it's a time for everybody who's still kicking here and still believes in it to look, take a very hard look in the mirror and ask themselves, like, what is the reason I'm here? And I personally truly believe it comes down to the ethos.
Yeah.
You know, and I think every builder in this space, you seemingly are on the exact same wavelength here. You're here because you see the opportunity to do something completely uniquely different that we've never been afforded that opportunity before. And we need, like, the only thing we have separating us from, you know, everything that happened before in Web 2 to this is purely based on what's our personal ethic, right? So, yeah.
And so kind of bouncing off that and looping it back into what we were talking about, sort of with DAOs, how do you see that, you know, you talked about, okay, there's these two things separating us. How do you think the DAO that we're seeing emerge in Web3 and that concept as a whole, how does that differ from, you know, the structure of a corporation, business, organization in Web2? Like, what are the differences and how is one an evolution of the other?
You know, I think there's this ideal, you know, idyllic place, right? Nirvana. Of what I imagine DAOs, you know, could be. I'll sort of step from where we are today, like Yuga Labs, right? Like, not a DAO, right?
No.
Not a decentralized organization, but they're at the forefront, right, of the space, at least, you know, until the floor keeps slipping and the fire sale starts. But, you know, generally, there aren't true DAOs out there. They're centralized entities, right? You usually have a small group of people making decisions for a larger group of people. You know, they do have sort of voting aspects built into their DAOs, but, you know, most of them are set up to vote on things that don't really mean that much. You know, it's still a centralized corporate structure. Now, what I will say, though, if that's done right, I would even make the case that in order to fully mature a DAO, you need to have some sort of centralized corporate structure, at least in the early days. And I'll just say this from, like, I went out and built a groundswell. And even then you have people saying, yes, I want to be involved, I want to do this. But there's got to be somebody managing all of those people saying, I want to help and do things, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're there yet where, like, autonomous systems and autonomous organizations are going to actually work. Because I guess that's the future, right? Like, the future really is, like, you know, each one of us has, like, a proxy AI, and, you know, that AI is making decisions for us inside this autonomous organization, right? Is doing the things that we are each one of our AIs would want to do. That's a far out concept. That's probably 150 years out. But what do DAOs really look like, you know, kind of the next evolution? I think where you're going to have is this a regrouping of, like, the labor unions, right? I'm seeing a lot of people coming together for common causes. Here in the US, there's, I think the token is called Burn One, and then there's a DAO. And what they do is they're essentially able to pool money and friendly attorneys and then deploy that money and attorneys at a local level to help people fight wrongful cannabis convictions, right? Or even if they, have been, busted because they had a plant in their pocket, hopefully an attorney can come in and help, not turn that into a prison sentence or anything like that, right? So there's these like social DAOs that are developing, which are great. They're wonderful. And I'm an ardent believer in that. And in fact, I think that like anything you give to a DAO should be fully write-offable on your taxes, right? You should be able to choose where to put that money in, because think about that. Like if I'm not going to call out any charity in specific because I don't want to wade into those waters, but like sometimes charities are set up to be corporations.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
And and how much money is like lost like in at the administrative level? Of like how much money goes to that. And I'm not saying those people aren't, but the ethos, again, we've gotten away from the ethos of like, we're running a charity, right? We're not paying ourselves $300,000 a year. Like if you want to go do that, like go get a corporate job, in the tech sector or, somewhere else, maybe running a charitable organization is not aligned with your lifestyle expectations, right? I'll leave it at that. But DAOs, social DAOs can make real change, and those people aren't making any money. Like they're actually coming from their heart and they're saying, we want to go do this. And that's a really admirable thing. And if you take that idea beyond just social change and you can push it into business, and then you get like-minded engineers, like-minded people. And I'll actually just divert really quick to what we did in Resistance DAO with this. There was a company that came in to our DAO. They were working on similar technologies, and then a use case arose within the DAO for a payment system. And these folks met each other, they collaborated on it, they brought their technology together, and they launched an entirely new product that is successful today and is running.
Wow.
So it was, and it's one of those rare beasts, right? And it's like, why was that successful? Well, certainly like timing, but they were also so close to the community that they had immediate market fit, right? They had immediate revenue on their books when they launched. And they also didn't waste any time with bad partnerships and people who weren't there for the real thing. Like it was people who were like, I don't have a job right now. Let's go. Like when your back's against the wall like that, you got to build. And that was the situation earlier in the summer where you had people who were like, I don't want to go back to my regular job. There was this great consolidation in the marketplace and consolidation of talent and resources. And, to your points, that has been very positive.
In this present form right now, what are the strengths of DAOs versus some of the weaknesses or challenges that still need to be worked through before we truly realize the potential of what that could be and what that could do?
Yeah. So I think the answer really lies in like tokens, like Soulbound, right? This idea, like where if I'm on LinkedIn and I'm an authority on LinkedIn or people who have recommended me for certain jobs I've done, well, then I shouldn't need to go to Fiverr and start an entirely new profile from zero. Like, some of my experience should be transferable. So I bring that up because that's really, I think, the success metric for DAOs going forward is how do you get beyond just an economic level of what someone's put into a DAO, right? How early they've come in, but also how do you quantify experience and how do you integrate that in decision-making, right? So is there experience weights, when you're making, we're all in this DAO together, but you obviously have a much more field of depth on this than I do. Well, like your vote should count more, right? Not because you bought more. And I don't want to sort of wade into that sort of like socialism aspect, right? But there are some aspects of that DAOs will incorporate naturally. Yeah, I think DAOs are made out of human beings, right? They're not autonomous organizations, truly. There's human beings at the end of the day, and human beings have their own, misguided steps that they make. They want to lack transparency because, with the lack of transparency, you can do more things, that might make you money, right? Or might increase your power position. What are all things related to, right? Power, money, religion. I think this all sorts of applies to DAOs as well. Like, power, money, religion. I guess the DAO could be all of those things at one point. But the real break is going to happen, I think, when people fully understand that corporations are just made out of people too. And the only difference or the leg up that corporations have over DAOs right now is that there's a structure behind them, right? There's an operating structure. But that structure is generally diseased. It doesn't operate at its most optimum, right? Because it's not optimized for the most efficient things that you could do. And in this case, DAOs, that's when they're gonna win. Because there's also this great like awakening taking place in society right now, even around and I think COVID brought a lot of this around, you know, people kind of stepping out of their normal lives and being shaken loose a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think people are a little bit more open-minded to, what does the future look like? And do we want to continue on this path of how we've been living, you know, for the last 80 some odd years, 90, you know, 100 years, or do we want to look at new models and how does technology support that? But, you know, again, we need a resurgence. We need a bear market to really pull mainstream adoption in.
You were talking about people are there for their own self-driven motivation and protecting their bags, and you're talking about how DAOs could be doing something different. What do you think is going to be take for DAOs or for people's personal ethic to motivate them to be part of actively participating in a DAO? Like where's that gap right now? And how do we bridge that gap as builders?
And I was going to add too, is there a level of like altruism that needs to, you know, be part of, you know, being a part of a DAO where you kind of set a bit of your own needs aside for, you know, the sum of the
purpose of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always going to be a niche market for DAOs. I mean, they're the same as social clubs in many regards, and they've been around since the dawn of time. The deeper question there, though, is like, when are people going to embrace the ethos? I tend to look at this in a way that like a lot of what's stopping that from occurring is the current structure, right? So the monetary supply, how things are paid for, who runs the world, right? You know, banks kind of from apply pressure from top down, politics, corruption. Like there's just lots of elements in our society right now that are impeding that. For their own reasons. I think like there just needs to be a degradation of like the US dollar, I'll speak from the US, like to such a degree that it is no longer ignorable. And people begin to understand that, you know, many centralized currencies are hyperinflationary, right? Here in the US, we aim for 2% inflation per year. When I was a kid, when I was 6 years old, I remember going to the soda machine and spending 25 cents, right? You go now, is almost $3.
Yeah.
Like what's happened there, right? And I think like we're approaching a point where it is becoming no longer ignorable that people will begin to look where their money is going to hold the most store. If that's gold, if that's silver. I mean, those are old styles of keeping wealth. But I guess that's my point is like when it starts to fall apart, money will go where it will get protection. And I think like it will go to decentralized sources like Bitcoin, Ethereum, mm-hmm. right? Because generally like the system is, and I sound like such a conspiracy and I hate to sound like this, but like we are just on a road that is not from a monetary supply, like a policy, like it is not tenable long-term. You cannot mm-hmm. continue to run deficits into the long-term and never pay for them. So my point is that the monetary supply will need to collapse. Unfortunately, I think like for people to really embrace not only cryptocurrencies, but the larger ethos is like, how do we bring things back to a local level? How do we think about our communities? Like, how do we stop thinking about all of these outside forces involving themselves in our lives? But really, we need to be focusing together at a local level because that's what's, you know, that counts, right?
Yes.
So I'm sorry, I kind of went like way down a rabbit hole there, but I truly feel like it's not going to happen unless there's a force to make it happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, then I want to follow up with that and what you said too. It goes back to my exact question I had before. You know, on a larger level, do you think even with a monetary collapse, which, you know, I'm with you on that, I think that is something that is necessary. But do you think if we're all about protecting our own bags, are people going to be shaken by such an event like that to actually start thinking about the community level? Or are they going to be so terrified of what happened? Like, well, we saw that what happened with the bear. People started panic selling. They sold everything just to protect their bags in whatever way possible. On a grand scale, you know, beyond the space of crypto, if that happens, are people going to actually have that ethos, do you think? Or do you think that we're going to see the exact same thing we just saw?
the economic influences will be polarized. Well, they'll be switched, right? So if you think about it, like, why did we really see this huge buildup in the bear market? Well, it's because COVID came in, it changed how we lived our lives. It also led to many governments, you know, putting excess money into the system, right, so that people could live. But many people saved that money. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up spending it in ways that they didn't pre-COVID, right? So, and in many cases, right, like many people had $1,000 extra that they could throw into the crypto space, or they could go and speculate on NFTs. Mm-hmm. That's my belief generally, like on why we saw such a rise, is that there was so much excess money in the system that people were spending in, right? Now, on the other side of it, it's like a different economic influence. It's now where like the money supply has collapsed. It's no longer about like party, party, party. It's like, oh shit, where do I move my money? Like, cause I got us in and I have no trust in the system at all. So I think when that's a different entry point. And, I think like when this does happen, right. Because I don't think that we have the leaders generally anywhere that are strong enough. Right. And I don't mean strong arm like Mussolini, but like, to be honest with the people, right? Like, we can't continue down this track forever. I don't think we have strong leaders like that, unfortunately. And when it does happen, it's like you get to this point where like, okay, well, what's worth more, Bitcoin or the US dollar?
Yeah.
Like, all right, where am I going to put my money?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Well, we already saw that with like Venezuela and, you know, the hyperinflation of their dollar there. That's why it happened there.
It's slowly starting to happen in some countries. I think it's a matter of time until it gets here. We're just kicking the can down the road, right?
Yes.
And there's only so far we can kick that can. So I agree with you. I was going to say that, you know, we sort of talked about where, you know, we've kind of been dancing around this idea of the future DAOs and what we need for them to sort of become, more of a...
realistic and... placed in a time where people are participating.
Becoming sort of more of a foundation of the way that we mm-hmm. do commerce and business. But for brands or entrepreneurs trying to build a DAO right now, right? Trying to build it with sort of the tools we have right now, the people we have right now, and the thinking that we have right now, are there any things that they should be, you know, keeping in mind? Like, you know, even pulling even from your experience of diving in and building one yourself.
Yeah, what's the purpose of the DAO, right? Because, you know, that's going to underline how you build it. You know, are you going to support it with a cryptocurrency, right? Is the play to make the DAO flush with cash? Okay, so if we're going to support a cryptocurrency, like, is the cryptocurrency going to be involved? In fact, like, in many countries, you probably need to set that cryptocurrency up, or actually the DAO needs to be set up as a separate entity, right? Needs to be completely separate. They often call them foundations. If you're aware of this and then you start to like look at the news, like you'll notice often these companies will spin up another company, but then they'll have foundation behind it, right? And that is often the DAO. So then you'll have a split there, but maybe you're not going to do a cryptocurrency. Maybe this is like a voting DAO, right? Or just voting on things and your money that you put in, right? That's all you're putting in and you're sort of maybe managing it almost like a venture fund, right? You're kind of, maybe you're investing it. Maybe you're giving it away to social causes. And then there's the last type of DAO that I would say, like, where it's more about need-based, right? So I'm in this, it's like a social group. In the US, there's this group, I can't remember the name of them, like, but they're in every single city in the US. They have these like monthly meetings. They're referral groups, right? So like local business, is it BHI, something like that? Local business groups will come together and they like will meet with each other for an hour once a month on a Tuesday in the Holiday Inn, and they're all just sort of swapping referrals, right? And they're there because they want to make money, right? But they're there because, so it's like, it's an answer, I guess it's a both sided equation. It's altruism and it's need, right? They're there because they're among their peer group. They're able to help someone out. They're able to feel good, right? They're able to help their own customer in many cases. Now they have this additional network, but then on the other side of it, they get it back, right? And I think that's what's missing from DAOs often, is you can't burn yourself and like give and never get anything back. And, hey, isn't that what centralization is today? The first 13 years of my career, I was trained on how to extract value from people's pockets as a marketer. The last two, it's been all about value addition. How can I bring value to my audience? So completely like different ways of approaching, you know, do I want to pick people's pockets or I don't want to help them out?
I think that all comes back down to, again, this whole conversation we've been having continuously about ethic, right? We are coming to Web3 to change that mentality of like, how can I take as much value away from you, which is the whole premise of Web 1, Web 2 kind of companies, to being like, I'm a human being. You guys are human beings. We care about each other. How can I provide you with something that brings value to your life? And then you reciprocate on that way to bring value to my life. And I think that is so important to protect as we move forward, because if we don't do that, then like, what's the point?
And that's the thing, is we are seeing a lot of the same like ways of doing business in Web 2 slowly seeping into this space, right? Because, you know, that's they're seeing obviously the opportunity. They're like, all right, well, this has worked here. We're bringing it here. But it is almost counterintuitive to your point to what we could be doing and what the potential and promise of this technology truly is, right? Which, you know, hinges largely on decentralization. So it's almost counterintuitive to bring in the same centralized way of doing things and just recreating that with this
tokens,
technology,
yeah.
Right? Which is a lot of what we're seeing, right? And mm-hmm. and I'm sure we'll see a lot more of it too. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on where you lie on the spectrum, right?
You know, I think smart brands are coming to Web3 right now because of really like a simple equation. And think about it like red ocean, blue ocean. If I'm a brand and I've got $1 million in advertising budget, I could put that into Facebook. I could put that into Google, YouTube, right? All these other platforms. It's a red ocean in the sense that my competitors are there. The cost is ever going to be increasing, right? I could spend that $1 million and get marginal results, right? Or I could take that $1 million and I could give it to a community directly in the form of swag, money, anything, right? I could pay for appearances. And the results I'm going to get out of that is like ripples and waves, because again, like I haven't asked you for anything. I just gave you value. You love me, right? You want to tell all your friends about me. Everybody wants to be part of this great club. When brands realize that just simple approach of like, I'm going to pay a third party or I'm going to pay my community, that's going to be the big ground shaker.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really great you bring that up. We've been talking about this in a previous episode, the exact same thing, that like the beauty of Web3, it allows these brands to cut out the middleman that just blankets a wide audience with the same message and frankly annoys them, because let's be honest, everyone hates ads. Like there's truly right. Maybe like a point, oh, you know, what, a 1% that actually is creating stuff that's entertaining, that people want to watch. The rest is just noise.
Mm-hmm.
And 100%, there's that shift that if you've got a loyal following and an audience that, you know, you can directly incentivize financially or through experiences, opportunities, it completely changes the way that we can do marketing. You sort of moving forward, right? It's less of like, yeah, it's moving from audience to a community of people, and it's giving them value in different ways that ads can't and never have been able to, you know, until now, essentially.
Well, so, giving them that value from yourself makes them feel that motivation to do something about it, you know?
Right.
Instead of just being sold to and being extracted of value, now you're in a position where you as the, you know, consumer or community member on the receiving end of stuff now feels like, wow, I like this person. I trust this person. I'm going to do what I want to be able to help this person out because I actually value what they do and what they've done for my life. And that internal motivation, again, brings on personal responsibility, personal autonomy, and can lead to decentralization, right? Yeah.
But I think also to your point, Chris, what it does for the brand is I actually imagine it's a better bang for their buck, you know, because I don't have any data to back this up, but I imagine what we might see is there might be a better ROI for the value that they're sort of, you know, the money that they're putting in. Because with an ad, like, you know, the ROI is really, really bleak. The conversion rates are really small, but like hyper targeting the group that you know loves you and financially incentivizing or putting that money from the ad space that you would otherwise use to for the media buy and putting that into the community. I'm assuming, again, no data to back this up, but I can imagine there'd be a better ROI there. It's just a better value or way to spend your money, right? Like that.
Yep. You know, and I want to go two ways with this really quick. So just remind me to come back to transmedia narratives. The other side is like really quick analytics and tracking, right? So you take the whole ethos that we've been talking about, but even take that idea of like, instead of, let me just fast forward. When I go to a website today, I get this big GDPR banner. It's sort of like this like cat and mouse game with me. Like, am I going to be able to figure out how to get out of this banner? Or am I just going to like acquiesce and like give up? and let you track me. How about like, we just don't do that. And instead what we do is we say to people, we want to build a relationship with you. And in fact, if you allow us to track your activities so we can learn more about our customers and provide you with better services, we'd like to deposit $5 in your bank account, right? And you might say to me, like, that's a crazy amount of money. But I know what the customer acquisition costs are for these brands. Yeah. They far exceed $5.
Yeah, much like $5 more than $5.
In the bucket, right? So like, if you come to me and I spin you up a wallet and I drop money in there, and then every time you come to my website, like you're earning more. It doesn't have to be monetary. It's just we start the relationship off on the right foot.
Jumping sort of into the outro and looking into the future. And again, I know we touched a bit on this. You know, you talked about, okay, we need a collapse in currency. And then, you know, we talked about proxy AI, which is 50 years in the future. But short of those two things, you know, talking about sort of the now and the immediate term, right? You know, how do you see the DAOs evolving? What businesses, or how do you see them disrupting business? And kind of what do you see the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of DAOs in sort of the current world that we're in right now?
You know, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that there hasn't been a social DAO that has really risen to prominence and been able to take on, you know, different social challenges, right? I mean, you'd almost think about it, right? Like, why aren't all the people on Twitter joining a DAO? And then they're able to sort of fight their own battles, right? But and their own fiefdoms, but as DAOs and organizations, and actually like move beyond being keyboard warriors to actually doing something in the world and in enacting change. I say that because I just would have thought that would have happened, right? It hasn't yet, though. So, and this isn't a great outlook, but unfortunately, I think in the near term, DAOs will be co-opted by corporate structure. Right. They'll come in under a various, different facades, right? Regulation will be one, experience will be another, right? Capital will be another. And then before you know it, right. And you've seen this with Yuga Labs, what you have is not a DAO, right? You have a couple of, order takers who have been installed and they're sort of executing a larger vision that may be entirely different from what the underlying structure is voting for. So I think those elements of like, revolution and how we change in our mind and how we even operate in our local communities, like that has to change in order to really experience DAOs in their fullness in the near term. Unfortunately, like I think it's going to be the version of like Trader Joe's might be the best type of DAO that we can hope for, or like Ocean Spray Cranberry, if you're familiar with how that business is structured, right? It's like those are the most realistic types of DAOs in the short term, in my opinion.
Interesting.
So you're essentially, and I think we've touched base on this, is that in order for DAOs to be more widely adopted and become kind of more of a staple or norm, it really requires a fundamental like mind shift change in culture and society as a whole, right? And into the sort of, you know, which we've talked about will come with a bit more pressure, varying pressure, right? Mm-hmm. Societal pressure and economic pressure and all that kind of stuff. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and this isn't really related to DAOs, but this is more related to the whole world of Web3. Like, you have a lot of companies, in my opinion, who are the next like Xerox, but they just don't know it yet, right? So like Meta is a good example of this. And I'm not picking on them because they just spent, you know, $10 billion or whatever they did. Like, I've just always looked at the life cycle of that company and said, like, it's going to come to an end some point, right? But the benefit, what are we going to get out of it in the death throes, in the death spiral of this company, right? It is going to throw money out the door in an attempt to find a new foothold and climb back up to prominence. Many ways they're going to do that, right, is leading the adoption on headsets for Oculus. They're going to pour money into that, right? They're going to pour money into inventing new environments. And again, I don't think it's going to change anything long term for those types of companies, right? They're on their way out. But it will usher in a almost like corporate paid for like introduction to Web3. Yeah. So I think that's already begun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It will continue to accelerate.
Oh, for sure. I think, and this is something Michael and I have talked about in other podcast episodes too, like mass adoption for people is going to come with that corporate Web3, because that's what people are used to. You know, we're not used to thinking about, oh, how can I be personally responsible for something? Or how can I feel inspired to be curious and to do what I'm passionate about or put myself in a situation of risk where my back's against the wall and I have everything to lose and everything to gain. We're not used to that. We haven't been used to that for decades. And so, yeah, the mass adoption of people coming into Web3, it's going to be led by the Metas, by the Starbucks, by any of the big corporations that are building currently. And then hopefully, you know, hopefully a small fish trying to build in that aspect of decentralization ethos, trying to empower people, provide value in an exchange of community, will be able to cling on to something that is a little bit more human than what we've been exposed to for the last, you know, 10, 15 years since, you know, social media has ruled the world, right? It's gonna be hard. We were at VCon this year, and the one talk, I keep bringing it up, but it was from a U.S. senator who's like one of the, or congressman. He was a congressman who's like on the headboard for like cryptocurrencies and all that sort of thing for the government. And he literally said, he's a libertarian, and he literally said, you need to start working together now, because eventually we're going to catch up and swallow all of this up. And that it stood out to me. It stood out to me because we have this very fine window right now to do that. And if we don't, that's it.
Well, like CBDCs, like in my opinion, are just surveillance coins.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's another sort of way for the, you know, I'm not saying like Web3 is like I can do things on Web3 that aren't fully transparent. Like they absolutely are, but it feels a little on Web3 to have to go through a centralized authority to then get into an is it no longer decentralized at that point? Like,
yeah,
it is. It's not.
It's an illusion. It's an illusion of decentralization, right? If you have that as a checkpoint or a gatekeeper, to your point, 100%.
Yeah, it's the same thing with digital ID. We just spoke about that in a previous episode, and where the state of the world is that in. It's like they're not being built in a decentralized fashion. It could be. We could finally have an era where us individuals finally own our credentials, like we do our physical body. And it's not happening that way. And so, you know, it would be great. We talked about this in the previous episode. It would be great if people stopped worrying about making 10K PFP monkey pictures and started thinking about how we can actually own our data or interoperate with these centralized systems to try and bring a little bit more decentralization to it, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a good, go ahead, Chris.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's a great segue into sort of the next question where, like, where do you think the space, the industry, and I obviously blanket that, that's a blanket term, but you know, the blockchain Web3 space, where do you think the space as a whole needs a drastic pivot to take us into the next sort of, I guess, iteration of it?
Or get out of this bear market?
Yeah, so my answer is a long-term lens, right? But to your question, like, what do they need to do? It's already happening. So I've got a 9-year-old. Intrinsically, he puts a whole bunch more value in, you know, Fortnite bucks than V-bucks, he does in a piece of paper currency, right? The skins that these kids are buying, right? The worlds that they're in, the identities that they're taking on, right? Through sort of characters. You then have additional technologies that are coming in, cameras using, eyes and lips and face movement that's being like then transposed onto those characters. It's then also allowing this like sort of larger idea of like transmedia narratives to start to develop. And this is where brands are a little bit concerned, right? And they rightfully should be. But, you know, if I buy a PFP right from a brand, right, if I'm taking on the skin of a brand, now I can begin to live that identity in other worlds, right? People talk about the metaverse. The metaverse is really like 2,500 apps and counting of different environments, right? And if you're bringing a brand, if you're wearing a brand into all of these different spaces, right, you're sort of doing the same thing we've always been doing, which is like advertising and marketing. Mm-hmm. So it's already happening. And it's not because these metaverse companies were so smart and brilliant. It sort of was a phase that started developing way back, you know, even, you know, in our day, right? We were playing video games, but now it's accelerated to these are giant e-commerce platforms, but they don't deal in USD. They deal in, you know, sorts of other, I mean, I have a joke with my son often where like, he'll begin to describe something to me and I'll say, that sounds a lot like an NFT.
I do the same thing with my nephew. He's 12. And we've had that. I explained to him what an NFT is, and he was able to relate it back to everything he does in Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's already happening. Like it's like folks, you and I were like, where's the future coming from? And it's like, it's right the hell behind us. Like that's, it's like a train coming.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that in previous episodes too. It's like, you know, people can get upset about where things are going. They may not like the idea of this digital world and this hyper digitization of our world, but it's been happening and it's going to continue happening. And you just look at young kids and they have been like, it's normal to them.
Yeah, they're the future creators, the future builders, the future consumers, and they're being raised in a world where this is just as natural to them as breathing air, right? Like, they see the value in digital assets, they see the value in this digital future. So if that's the world you're being brought up in, like, it's not, we are not going back, guys. I'm sorry. No. Like, we're not turning around. It's only one way, and that's forward, right?
And you probably noticed as well, like, generally, you probably carry less cash than you did 10 years ago,
yes.
Right? Cash. The number of places that accept cash, right? Have you noticed that?
Yep.
That's also sort of begun to slide.
Oh, yeah.
Canada is, I think, the country that accepts the least amount of cash in the world.
And our goal, at least from what I understand, is the goal is to go cashless by end of 2025, beginning of 2026.
Like for the country.
Two years from now,
yes.
They want to be a completely cashless country. Because
yes.
96% of all Canadians have a smartphone in their pockets. That's the stat. So I think... It would just become the most cashless nation. I don't know when it happened. I mean, obviously years in the making, but that's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Terrifying,
yeah.
Right?
And I put a post on LinkedIn the other day. I live in Hendersonville, North Carolina. If anybody's watching this, look it up on a map. I'm like in the middle of nowhere, right? And the other night I was able to order Vietnamese food and pay for it in Ethereum. So the future's already here. It's just not evenly distributed yet.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But I wonder if it'll ever be evenly distributed. Right?
Yeah.
That's challenging.
You want to ask the last question? Last two, you can take them.
Yeah. This is more of a personal one, Chris. What is the most important lesson that you've learned in your time in Web3?
A lot of people in this community come to it from a very altruistic view, and they want to give a lot of themselves. And that is 100% admirable, and it should be encouraged. But for anybody out there that's building a community or starting to give more of themselves, you can't let it eat you alive, right? Because it will. It'll eat you alive. You care too much, right? You start carrying a lot of other people's problems. There's a lot of stress there. So take care of yourself, right? Don't forget that. Because I honestly had to, like, I had to step away, you know, I had sort of like a mental like break, you know, in, late September of just not like a break reality, like just like a, like I had to stop running the resistance as much as I was, because it was just eating me alive emotionally, you know, physically, like it just takes up all your time. So that's the number one thing I would say is like, yes. Be beautiful, shine brightly, give yourself, right? But then also, like, just remember not to just let it get all taken away. Like, leave some for yourself.
Yeah. Do you think that to be able to do that when you care so much and you want to create, do you think that it's through partnerships with the right people that you can manage that so you don't carry the load as much? Or, like, how do you manage that? Because... I just getting a sense from you, like, I feel like we're very similar in terms of wanting to create something that brings people in. And I when you're talking about being burnout, I know exactly where you're at, because I literally just closed my business after 6 years where that was a huge part of it. It gave way too much, didn't have enough support. So what do you think the solve is in that regard, to be able to manage providing value and creating community and actually building something you want versus also taking a step back for that self-care?
I think that creators need to be rewarded, right? And, you know, often when you feel burnt out, you're pushing into that next level thinking like, this is going to be the breakthrough that's going to actually pay me a dollar on this thing, right? And you just have to keep that mindset like in place from day one, and even start to set that expectation early on of like, I give a ton of value, I'm here to help people, but at the end of the day, like, I have a family. And like, I'm going to be creative on how I'm going to support them. But a part of that is like, if you like the content, like, buy me a coffee.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that early enough. And when I did, it felt it felt inauthentic and it felt rushed. And I, you know, that's what I would say. Like, you gotta, if you're going into it and you expect to make any money out of it, like, you have to be really clear, you know? And when it doesn't work, you have to be a big enough person to back out, like, gracefully, but like shut it down, go try something else for a little bit, like, take a breather. That's not your life. And you can revisit it again. But, and there's also like this shame spiral in this space as well. Like, because we're all trying, like, in the Web3 space to like go. And then on LinkedIn, like, you would think that like everybody is successful and is like running these like, you know, wild businesses and like meeting with Gary Vee and like, you know, John Krasinski or, you know, whatever his name is. Like, I always say it wrong, but like, that's not the reality for 99% of us. And, you know, you shouldn't be ashamed about that. Like, you know, we're all busting our butt. Even if you had to go back and work at McDonald's, who cares? Like,
yeah,
building something.
Yeah. I honestly, all of that resonates so hard with what you just said.
How do listeners get in touch with you? You know, kind of, yeah, absolutely. Plug anything you want to plug.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to get in touch with me, I am on LinkedIn. I don't do the sort of the Twitters or the Telegrams or the WhatsApp or anything like that. I'm just joking, but I really don't. I'm only on LinkedIn. You can join my Resistance DAO group just by searching it on LinkedIn. And then additionally, if you are listening and you're a venture capital fund, or if you're a PE or a family office, or you're even doing real estate investments like REITs, I work for a company called Syndicately, and what we've done is we've automated private and alternative investment, and we've made it so easy. It's just like, you know, on e-commerce, buying a coffee offline, right? That's how your investing should be. And you might ask yourself, well, what do you charge for such a wonderful service, Chris? Well, we only take 1% of the total gross capital raised, right? And if you take a look at some of our competitors, you can see that it's far away from what they are charging. So syndicately.com, get in touch with me. We'll do a demo. I'll make it painless, 15 minutes, and we'll figure out if we can work together.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris, for your time and your insight and wisdom and all of that. It's been awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me.
So that marks the end of the interview with Chris, and I'm leaving that interview hopeful that the ethos of Web3 and everything we kind of touched on in a lot of our episodes is not just our own little echo chamber, but something that a lot of people who are building things with real value for building community actually also resonate with.
Right. And something that I hope gets preserved and maintained and, you know, prioritized as we continue to grow and build this space.
Well, that's the whole purpose of this podcast, right? It's to help individuals like yourself listening to this figure out where your space is in the Web3 ecosystem and how you can transform what you're doing to become more about personal ownership and community ownership and building something that builds equity and value for multiple people rather than extracting it. So we really hope that this episode provided some of that value for you. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't yet subscribed to our podcast, make sure you hit the subscribe button to whatever podcasting app you're listening to this on or on YouTube. And check us out on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, TikTok at Not a JPEG Podcast. We're going to be posting a ton of great little mic drops from this episode. I can't wait to put those out into the world. We look forward to connecting with you. And just remember, in case you forgot, make sure you tell everybody who you're working with, building with, and trying to explore Web3 with that Not a JPEG is your new favorite podcast. Thanks so much.
We'll see you next week.